Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 29th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Fixing Sights on Success. This is an article by Tony Reed, staff writer for the Herald and Review, from Taylorville. Ashley Rahar's 5'6" frame houses a strong sense of purpose. Whether it's taking on a massive historic house renovation or persuading her nervous husband, Justin, that she can have the place ready for this year's Taylorville Christmas home tour, Rahar has never met a bridge that's too far. She does admit she had to punch a little bit below the emotional belt to win the home tour argument. It turns out her husband's beloved late grandmother, Chari Fines, was a leading light in organizing previous Taylorville home tours, so she recruited her mother-in-law, Christy Rahar, to lean on the son and husband a little bit. She just said to him, "Oh, your grandma would be so thrilled that you guys are doing it. So proud," Rahar says. She kind of got on to my husband about it. There were tears, everything. Having won the day, however, Rahar is faced with getting on with the job. Her circa 1871 two-story home is an inner-city mansion that covers 4,700 square feet with 5 bedrooms, multiple bathrooms, and 44 windows, some of them 10 feet tall and 11 feet wide. The place has had several careful owners in the last 145 years and a few who couldn't care less. So time has left its scars. And a few interior oddities. How about an upstairs shower stall that has a flushing toilet installed inside it? Talk about the ultimate utility room. Some things you just look at and think, "What the?" says Rahar, 33. "But my husband thinks the shower toilet is the coolest thing since sliced bread, and my kids all think it's quite the best thing." She says the odd couple combo is on the long-term list to get changed, but she adds the art of tackling home renovation is knowing how to triage according to time and budget constraints. Rahar, her hubby and their children, Clark 10, Heath 9, Blair 5, and 2-year-old Luke, only moved in last October, and Mom's been working out a plan of campaign for the house and the first residents in Taylorville history to get one of those newfangled telephones. Rahar's goal now is to recall it back to life as a comfortable home with loads of room for a growing family. Hubby works 2 jobs, having recently finished working for 14 days straight, so much of the renovation planning and grunt work falls to his wife. She is an agent for Curvy Real Estate and can do a lot of her homework, as it were, from home. In between kid care and earning a living, she becomes a renovation whirlwind, wrapping projects around family life. "I have decorating attention deficit disorder," she says. "That's kind of like while you see a million projects going on. It has a lot to do with my kids because I have to work around whatever they're doing when they're home." So the other day, she was pulling up carpet staples out of a wood floor with her son Luke riding on her back the whole time, making it into a game. When Luke gets tired of that and wants to go outside, his mom switches gears, turning on the garden hose for him to play with while she tackles clearing up the overgrown yard. "My water bill is outrageous," she says with a smile. And so it goes, inside, outside, painting ceilings, prepping floors, paneling walls, and forever mastering new tasks. Her skill repertoire keeps growing, fueled by online searches and binge-watching HGTV, her favorite channel. Another great motivator is sticker shock from finding out what it costs to have things done professionally. "I love my old windows, and I got a quote to have the glazing materials scraped out and redone," she recalls. "I think the figure they quoted me was like $25,000. 2 hours after I got that quote, my son, Clark, kicked a soccer ball through one of my living room windows. At that point, I said, 'Okay, everybody in the car, we're leaving.' I can't even remember what we did. We just left." Running away is her old house renovation safety valve so she can calm down and regroup. But she always comes back, now armed with newly researched knowledge on the art of window resuscitation. What buoys her are the days when she actually gets a task done, maybe while having saved a whole bunch of money, and the hovering vision of just what the grand old home could be creeps another inch forward. I feel like I am saving a piece of the past, and this will be a beautiful home for us, she says. But I work better under pressure, and that's another reason I signed up for the home tour. It gives me a good, hard deadline to get some immediate things done. That's just the kind of can-do spirit the home tour organizers were looking for. Carol Alexander, who has been involved in running the tours for the last 25 years, plans to bow out after the 2016 version, set for December 2nd and 3rd, and is looking to make a grand final statement, hence the 2016 tour theme, Return to Downton Abbey. Alexander, a passionate fan of the PBS TV costume romp that features the glorious architecture of English stately homes, has even persuaded the WILL TV station to loan some full-sized cardboard cutouts of characters from the show. They will be positioned among the backdrop of rich stained glass and carved woodwork adorning a former Baptist church, also on the tour, where visitors can sip sparkling apple cider and pose for selfies with Lady Mary and other Downton Abbey favorites. It's good fantasy stuff, but underneath it all, Alexander hopes visitors who go on to see the efforts of regular folks doing extraordinary things, such as Ashley Rahar, will be inspired, at least a little bit. I don't want to give you the impression it's Appalachia out here, but a lot of Taylorville neighborhoods definitely need attention, she says. Our goal is to share Taylorville's rich architectural history to help polish its current image. We also want to encourage everybody to improve their property, and while they may not all be as brilliantly talented as Ashley and work on the scale she is tackling in her great home, there is perhaps something they can do. And some pictures accompany this article. The first shows Ashley Rahar and her husband, Justin, removing a radiator from the dining room as part of Ashley's interior improvement work on their Victorian-era home in Taylorville. Another photograph shows Ashley Rahar showing the shiplap wall paneling that she installed in her laundry room. Next photo, the Rahars inherited a shower toilet when they purchased their Victorian-era home, and sure enough, sitting inside a large shower is a full toilet. And finally, Ashley wielding a heavy machine, Ashley Rahar sands the dining room floor while doing renovation work on her Victorian-era home. Rahar says she plans to do something different than the pictured wallpaper. The pictured wallpaper showing flowers and stripes and blues and creams. Also on the front page, article titled, Freezing Tuition Criticized. State Tuition Freeze Has Side Effects. This is an article from the AP, David Mercer. From Champaign, the Illinois law that locks in tuition rates for in-state students appears to have the unintended effect of driving up tuition for out-of-state students and fees for all, according to a pair of studies from University of Illinois researchers. The statute, which took effect in 2004, guarantees a freshman at a state university will pay the same tuition rate for 4 years. Only three other states, Oklahoma, Texas, and as of the summer, North Carolina, have similar laws, but legislators in places such as Utah and Idaho recently have considered, or at least discussed, fixed-rate tuition laws. Such laws around the country, however, increased student fees between 2000 and 2012 by 40%, and tuition rates for out-of-state students by 28%, according to a study published in the September-October issue of the Journal of Higher Education, by researchers Jennifer Delaney and Tyler Carney. In Illinois alone, 12 public universities increased their non-resident tuition rates by up to 30% since 2004, which was faster than other states. Our research is showing the increase beyond what was expected, Delaney said, because university administrators, who were forced to plan out revenue needs for four-year periods, appear to have increased non-resident tuition as a way to keep the money flowing. Average public university tuitions that had been less than $4,000 both in Illinois and the rest of the country in 2000 grew far apart by 2010. The average public tuition rate in Illinois was much more than $7,000 a year compared to less than $5,000 in other states. The price of a state college degree nationwide has risen alongside dwindling state support and a rise in student loan debt. In Illinois, the ongoing budget crisis has cut not only state support of public universities, but also financial aid. But those decreases in state support started years ago and drove drastic jumps in tuition. I was just getting out of school at that point. I was seeing tuition jumping 16%, 18% each year, said State Senator Scott Bennett, a Democrat who graduated from the Illinois State University and later University of Illinois Law School. His district now includes Urbana-Champaign, and he's a member of the Senate's Higher Education Committee. That led to the creation of Illinois' law, which was intended to give students predictability in what they would pay. But now, University of Illinois administrators say the studies underline their belief that it's time to end the tuition freeze law, spokesman Tom Hardy said. I think that the law has probably served its useful purpose, and that this is one of those laws or governmental mandates that would probably be useful, helpful to public universities, if that went by the boards, he said. The cost of tuition, housing, and other expenses over 4 years at the system's flagship Urbana-Champaign campus, for instance, now tops $100,000 for in-state students. The American Association of State Colleges and Universities, at the time Illinois' law was written, praised the idea of providing predictable rates, but questioned whether the law would truly hold down tuition. Now, the group says it is not surprised to find that it led to increases for some. This is a policy that, again, is very popular among state lawmakers. It's very simple. People get it, said Thomas Harnish, the association's director of state relations and policy analysis. But it just hasn't shown to be a good policy. Texas and Oklahoma created their own laws and allow in-state students to opt in rather than requiring schools to freeze rates. Participation rates are very low, Delaney said. North Carolina's new law affects different schools in different ways, but would set guaranteed four-year tuition rates at University of North Carolina system campuses. While schools and policy groups may be ready to see Illinois' law and those like it go away, Bennett said that would be hasty. The law benefits in-state students who know what they'll pay for 4 years, he said, and that's useful amid the state's budget crisis, which has eliminated some financial aid and left schools scrambling for revenue. I'm not a fan of lifting the guaranteed tuition until we feel there's an alternative in place, he said. Also from the Associated Press, a healthcare article on the front page, Health Overhaul Likely, Whoever Wins Presidency. With the hourglass running out for his administration, President Barack Obama's health care law is struggling in many parts of the country. Double-digit premium increases and exits by big-name insurers have caused some to wonder whether Obamacare will go down as a failed experiment. If Democrat Hillary Clinton wins the White House, expect her to mount a rescue effort. But how much Clinton could do depends on finding willing partners in Congress and among Republican governors, a real political challenge. There are turbulent waters, said Kathleen Sebelius, Obama's first Secretary of Health and Human Services. But do I see this as a death knell? No. Next year's health insurance sign-up season starts a week before the November 8th election, and the previews have been brutal. Premiums are expected to go up sharply in many insurance marketplaces, which offer subsidized private coverage to people lacking access to job-based plans. At the same time, retrenchment by insurers that have lost hundreds of millions of dollars means that more areas will become one-insurer markets, losing the benefits of competition. The consulting firm, Avalere Health, projects that 7 states will only have 1 insurer in each of the marketplace regions next year. Administration officials say insurers set prices too low in a bid to gain market share, and the correction is leading to sticker shock. Insurers blame the problems on sicker-than-expected customers, disappointing enrollment, and a premium stabilization system that failed to work as advertised. They also say some people are gaming the system, taking advantage of guaranteed coverage to get medical care only when they are sick. Not all state markets are in trouble. What is more important, most of the 11 million people covered through healthcare.gov and its state-run counterparts will be cushioned from premium increases by government subsidies that will rise with the cost. But many customers may have to switch to less comprehensive plans to keep their monthly premiums down. And millions of people who buy individual policies outside the government marketplaces get no financial help. They will have to pay the full increases or go without coverage and risk fines. People with employer coverage and Medicare are largely unaffected. Tennessee's insurance commissioner said recently that the individual health insurance market in her state is very near collapse. Premiums for the biggest insurer are expected to increase by an average 62%. 2 competitors will post average increases of 46% and 44%. But because the spigot of federal subsidies remains wide open, an implosion of health insurance markets around the country seems unlikely. More than 8 out of 10 healthcare.gov customers get subsidies covering about 70% of their total premiums. Instead, the damage is likely to be gradual. Rising premiums deter healthy people from signing up, leaving an insurance pool that's more expensive to cover each succeeding year. My real concern is 2018, said Caroline Peterson, a senior vice president with Avalere. If there is no improvement in enrollment, we could see big sections of the country without any plans participating. If Republican Donald Trump wins the White House, he'd start dismantling the Affordable Care Act. But Clinton would come with a long list of proposed fixes, from rearranging benefits to introducing a government-sponsored public option as an alternative to private insurers. Not all her ideas would require congressional action. She is going to find it important to continue to expand health care, said Joel Ario, a former Obama administration official who's now with the consulting firm Manat Health. People in the Clinton camp say she recognizes that as president, she'd have to get Obama's law working better and is taking nothing off the table. Public option. Clinton's primary rival, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, advocated Medicare for all, and that pushed Clinton to a fuller embrace of government-run insurance. But Democrats could not get a public option through Congress, even when they had undisputed control. Whichever party wins the Senate in November, the balance is expected to be close, and Republicans are favored to retain control of the House. While a new national health insurance program seems a long shot, Obama's law allows states to experiment. I think the public option is more likely to be tested at a state level, Sebelius said. Sweetening subsidies. Clinton has proposed more generous subsidies and tax credits for health care, which might also entice more people to sign up. but she'd have a tough time selling Republicans. It may be doable in the bargaining around budget and tax bills, but Democrats would be pressed to give up some of the health law's requirements, including a premiums formula that tends to favor older people over young adults. Incremental changes. Whether it's fixing a family glitch that can prevent dependents from getting subsidized coverage, requiring insurers to cover more routine services outside the annual deductible, or reworking the premium stabilization program for insurers, incremental changes seem to offer a President Clinton her easiest path. Medicaid expansion. Expect a Clinton White House to tirelessly court the 19 states that have yet to expand Medicaid or for low-income people. She'd ask Congress to provide the same 3 full years of federal financing that early adopting states got under the health law. GOP governors would demand more flexibility with program rules. I'm just hoping that reality begins to sink in when she is inaugurated, Sebelius said. If the law is not going to go away, then let's make it work. And from the local page on education, ISU hits sweet spot with higher enrollment. This is by Lenore Sabota of the Lee News Service. From Normal, Illinois State University is expecting increases in overall enrollment and freshman enrollment for the third year in a row, at a time when most public universities in the state are struggling to maintain their student numbers. August 22nd was the first day of classes, and preliminary figures show freshman enrollment topping 3,600 and overall enrollment more than 21,000, according to Jay Groves, ISU Chief of Staff. We don't count officially until the 10th day census, Groves said Wednesday. I think when the 10th day comes out, we'll have something to celebrate. Graduate student enrollment also is up. Diversity is strong, and the academic credentials of incoming students remains substantial, with an ACT average score of 24, he said. It's shaping up to be a remarkable year, Groves said. University officials have said for years that ISU's enrollment sweet spot is at about 20,000 to 21,000 students. Groves said the 21,000-plus students attending ISU this fall are not a problem. We have the classes to accommodate them. We have the housing to accommodate them. We have the faculty and support staff for being at the right ratio and class sizes, he said. Speaking Monday about ISU's strong enrollment, University President Larry Dietz said, "Students are voting with their feet, and we have a lot of feet on campus today." The growth in enrollment is especially satisfying for ISU, considering last year's economic and political climate made it difficult for Illinois universities to recruit students, Groves said. With potential students and their parents raising questions because of the state budget impasse, Groves said, the situation made us work that much harder to tell the ISU story even stronger. Strong freshman enrollment the last 2 years, coupled with ISU's excellent retention rate, have contributed to the university's enrollment growth, Groves explained. Retention is defined as the percentage of students who return after their freshman year. ISU's retention rate was for the first time college students who started in fall 2014 was 81.5%. In addition to the retention rate, Groves cited ISU's graduation rate, relatively low student debt, and ability of graduates to get jobs as factors in its continued strong enrollment. That word gets around, Groves said. Illinois State has a 6-year graduation rate of 73.4%, which places it in the top 10% nationwide, according to the university. Nationally, the 6-year graduation rate at public universities is 56%, according to the U.S. Department of Education. And from Decatur, Allison Petty, staff writer for the Herald and Review, writes, Street Bids, Video Gambling, Goals Return to Council. From Decatur. The Decatur City Council will return to several previously discussed topics at its meeting tonight. Video gambling, city goals, and bids for street repairs. The bids are up for a second vote after the council rejected them 4-3 at its August 1st meeting. The work is to be funded by the city's local motor fuel tax. Several council members expressed concerns about contractors whose bids were deemed non-responsive by city staff, citing a failure to comply with the city's minority participation goals. City officials have refused to name those contractors publicly. Bids also came in lower than expected, and some council members had said they wanted to include more work. The minority participation goals, which the council approved in 2015, require that contractors make a good faith effort to ensure minority workers perform at least 18% of the total hours worked on city projects. When the job includes a subcontractor, the goal is for 10% of the total dollar amount to be performed by minority-owned businesses. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, one of the initial no votes, motioned August 15th to reconsider the bids, saying it was bad business to rebid the projects. Later in the meeting, the council will hold study sessions on the other two topics, as well as hear the treasurer's monthly financial report. City Manager Tim Gleason said he previously distributed a memo to council members that provided information about the city's options to restrict video gambling as a home rule community. He plans to seek feedback tonight. The city could cap the existing number of licenses for parlors, for example, or reduce the number through attrition as businesses close. Gleason said he is not making a recommendation for council action, but provided the information as a response to council members' questions. The council will also view the final draft of its goals, which members have discussed at several meetings over a period of months. The city also sought residents' input in forming the goals. And the sidebar notes that if you go, the Decatur City Council meets at 5:30 p.m. today in the council chambers, third floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. And from the A3 briefs on the local page, from Decatur, Beekeeping Program. The history of beekeeping and the challenges keepers face will be presented at Bees and Beekeeping, Then and Now, at 2 p.m., Sunday, September 4th, at Homestead Prairie Farm in Rock Springs Conservation Area. Admission is free and no registration is required. For more information, visit MaconCountyConservation.org. Also from Decatur, Demystifying Wine. The Continuing and Professional Education Division at Richland Community College will offer a Demystifying Wine 101 class in September. The class will be held at the Decatur Club, 158 West Prairie Avenue, on Tuesdays, September 6th to the 27th. The cost is $65. Participants must be 21 or older. Call 217-875-7211, extension 6265. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, August 29th, 2016. Please stay tuned.